originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm sitting here in our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank everyone listening to us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, on Sirius 219 XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to former riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Please, if you are able to help, visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So my guest this evening is a native of Peru. He's won multiple riding titles, and he has a long list of graded stakes victories to his name. And he's experienced the highs and the lows of this great sport, maybe better than anyone, with 1,734 victories and over $57 million in earnings. Very happy to introduce to you all Jockey Miguel Mena. Miguel, welcome to the show.
Hey, Christina. Hi. How you doing?
I am doing very good, Miguel. How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And have you recovered from Derby weekend?
Yeah. Today, Tuesday, I'm fully recovered. I just woke up from a good nap after working at the back sale in Churchill Downs.
Good deal. And what did you think of the race? Always dreaming, of course. Won the Kentucky Derby on Saturday, and we'll be headed to the Preakness. What are your thoughts on that race?
It looks like the best horse won the race, you know. He was in second most of the way, set the pace and hang on at the end. They couldn't catch him, you know. Looking at Lee, a horse that ran second, saving a lot of ground, just couldn't get to him. He looked like Johnny B had a lot left at the end, and I don't know, breaking good next time in the Preakness, I think he would be very, very tough to beat.
And you rode at Churchill on Saturday. What was your opinion of the racetrack?
I rode there, Friday, Oaks Day and Saturday, and obviously we had a sloppy track, but it was pretty tight, pretty fast. I won a couple races down on the inside. I thought the inside was great. A couple of horses in the Derby, got to go a little wide, and they had a couple, rough trips. But, I think inside was the place to be, and that's where Always Dreaming was. And, the second place horse, which is, looking at Lee, he ran second in the race by saving all the ground.
Yeah, it was a great race. I was all over looking at Lee. I was hoping he'd catch the leader Always Dreaming, but no such luck. Obviously, both horses ran very well. And Miguel, I would love to, later on in the show, we're going to talk more about your own Kentucky Derby experiences. But first, I want to go back, Miguel, and you are from Peru. And I want to find out more about you and how you got started in this great sport, and tell me about growing up in Peru.
Yeah, well, I'm 30 years old from Lima, Peru. I was raised in a town called Tablada de Lurin, just an hour and a half from Hipódromo de Montorico, Jockey Club del Peru. I was racing the backside. My dad rode for 17 years, and I attended the races all the weekends after school, and I watched my dad rode. And basically, I just wanted to follow his steps, you know. I wanted to become a jockey ever since he put me in a horse. I think he put me in a horse when I was, you know, 5, 6 years old, and that's all I wanted to do, you know. I grew up dreaming as becoming a jockey and coming to America to ride races.
Wow, 5 or 6 years old, he put you on your first horse. And watching your father and growing up and riding, and was he a successful rider? And did you see all of the hardships he had to deal with along the way?
My dad, he didn't enjoy a lot of success because, you know, the racetrack in Lima seems to be a very tough circuit. You know, they have a lot of riders and a lot of apprentices coming out every year, you know. But he won some good races. He did, you know, he did pretty good, and everybody knew him. So everybody knew us growing up there, and my uncle also trains, and I was in the backside helping the grooms and the hard worker, help him do stuff, and that's how I don't know, he just got into me.
So you're bitten by the bug at a very early age, Miguel. And why did you, growing up, you said you always had that desire to ride races and go to America. Why did you think that you should go to America versus stay there in Peru?
Well, when I was little, you know, all you would hear was how Edgar Prado, Julio Pessoa, Jorge Chavez, how they were, you know, making us look good and winning the big races, you know, and you always will hear about the Kentucky Derby and Breeders' Cup races and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what I had in mind. You know, I wanted to become a successful rider and be able to, you know, come to the States. And thankfully, I was able to come early at 16 years old. I didn't think I was going to come that early, but the opportunity came and they brought me here.
Wow, at a very early age. And you mentioned some of the great, great riders who also originated there in Peru. And there's a pretty well-known jockey school there, is there not?
Yeah, we have a jockey school in the racetrack in Lima. You know, it's one of the best schools in South America. And, you know, a lot of good riders have come out of there, you know. You know, Edgar Prado, Jorge Chavez, you know, Rafael Bejarano, Alan Garcia. And, you know, not only on the big racetracks in America, I mean, if you go and see in the little tracks, there is always Peruvian riders winning races.
Did you go to that same jockey school yourself, or did you just learn from your father?
No, I did. I did, because in Lima, in order to, if you want to become a jockey, you have to go to the jockey school. So I did go. I was I got in it when I was 14.
Oh wow! So that's a requirement. You can't even get your jockey's license in Peru until you go to jockey school. That's wow. That's interesting. Do you think that's something that we should adopt here in the United States?
Yeah, it would be, you know, it would be a good thing, but I think that they have one in Lexington, but it's outside the racetrack, so it's kind of hard because they only have a few horses to get on.
Right.
This jockey school in Peru is inside the track, and you know, you will go in, getting at 5 a.m. and you will get out at 5 p.m. and you will help. You know, your job will be to, you know, help this. Trainers gallop their horses and everything. We will not get paid. We just get, you know, gallop 10, 15, 20 horses a morning. And that helps, you know, I think, to learn a lot quicker and get used to things, you know?
Oh, yeah. Getting on 10, 20 horses a day, that will, you'll learn very, very quickly. And that's a long day, from 5 in the morning to 5 at night. So you were not just galloping all of those horses, I'm assuming you were also doing some of the groundwork and grooming and cleaning stalls, I'm assuming?
Yeah, yeah. They teach you to, you know, to learn about, you know, basically horse racing, you know, from grooming horses and cleaning stalls and, you know, washing your own dishes, because they feed you too, and you will have to take turns and clean, you know, help clean the school and, you know, like clean the patio and the restrooms and stuff, you know.
Was there a large group of future jockeys there attending the school at the time that you were going there?
Yeah, every year, you know, there's admission, and it depends. Every year is different. You know, 20 guys will show up, 30. When I came, 50 guys showed up, and by the time went on, they started, you know, giving up. Some of them, you know, never been to the track, and, you know, they will refer, hey, you're small, you can be a rider. But, you know, as they experience the risk or, you know, falling off and stuff like that, they will be like, you know, I don't like it, and they will go, and the group will get smaller, you know.
Of course. And did you ever have any doubts in your mind while you were going to jockey school and going through those long, hard days and you know, I'm sure, as you mentioned, I'm sure at some point in the early days, you know, the horse would throw you off or this or that. Did you ever have any doubts?
No. Thankfully, it was just, it's in my blood, you know, and it's been my blood and my heart and my mind forever. I mean, so I just wanted to, you know, put the hard work into it and learn, and I just couldn't wait for my first race to, you know, to graduate and buy my first race.
Well, and tell us about that. So how long did you actually attend the jockey school there, and when did you ride your first race?
I went to the school I got in 2001, like January 2001, and it was actually me and some other guys, but Alan Garcia was in my group too. So we didn't, the rule is that you have to be there for 2 years to be able to graduate, but since we grew up around the track, we were galloping horses and stuff before we ever got into the school. So we were able to graduate a year earlier with the other guys from the group before. So we were lucky to graduate quicker than others.
That's awesome. And I'm sure you were chomping at the bit to ride your first race. And did you ride your first race in Peru?
Yes, I did. I rode my first race in 2003, and I won on a horse named Platanal for trainer Carlos Gastañeda. And then I just rode a few more months in there to my wing number 50 before I became a regular jockey, because in the race number 50, in your wing number 51, you lose your bug. So I stopped before I lost my bug, and somebody came and grabbed my papers and brought me here.
Wow, so that's interesting. So the apprentice system works differently there in Peru. You said you just win 50 races, and then all of a sudden you're a journeyman. And over here, of course, it's you know, it's much different. You win so many races, you go from a 10-pound to a 7-pound, depending on the state, and then you basically have a year after you've won your fifth race. So that's and if you're hot, 50 wins, you know, that can happen pretty quickly, I'm sure. So you decided to hold off and then continue. You continued your apprenticeship here in the United States?
Yeah, I came to the United States in August 31st, if I'm not wrong. August 31st of 2003. Came to Calder, but at the time there was like two bug boys just winning all the races. It was Eric Castro. I think he ended up winning the Eclipse Award. So it was kind of hard for me to get going, you know, in Calder, which is it can be a tough circuit. So I stayed in Florida, in Miami, Florida for about 8 months, and then I left to go to Chicago.
Joggy Miguel Mena is joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Miguel, when you first arrived at Calder from Peru, did you notice, as far as riding styles go, did you notice, was there a difference between riding in Peru and riding in the States?
Yeah, totally different, you know. It's a totally different experience. Riders in Peru ride with the whip down usually, and I will have to get used to putting the whip up, you know, to, you know, I had to change everything, you know. I had to change my style, my you know, just because they told me, and Peruvian style didn't work here. You had to change everything.
Wow. That had to be quite the adjustment. So they don't cock their stick in Peru. They hit underhand. That's interesting.
Huh. Yeah, yes.
What else would you say riders were more aggressive here or in Peru?
I mean, I think there is aggressive riders everywhere. You know, in Peru, it just seems to be a slower racetrack too. You know, 22, 21 and change. You don't really see that in Peru, because we have, I think the racetrack in Peru is a heavy kind of track. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's just bigger. Like here, you don't have the big racetracks. Like here, you have just a mile tracks, and the grass will be, you know, a mile and 7/8. The track in Peru is a mile and a quarter, and the grass is mile and 8. So I also had to get used to, you know, the different speed, different fractions earlier in the races, and the tighter turns, and you know, shorter stretch, since the track in Lima, Peru has, I think, a quarter and 50 yards, you know. I mean,
wow.
You just got, you know, I just had to work on a few things and get used to it, you know.
Well, exactly. And did you have anyone there in the room in Calder when you first arrived? Did you have anyone in the room kind of coach you and try to help you learn the ways of riding in the States?
Yeah. Thankfully, I was kind of a likable guy. I guess they always like, you know, South American little kids, when they come and they don't speak English, you know, they all help you. Everybody wants to help you, you know. And there was, you know, Manuel Cruz. There was, in Calder, there was Manuel Aguilar, you know. Just a lot of guys, you know, and they all try to help me. Even my valet Nelson, a guy Nelson Figueroa, and at the time, I don't know if you know Rubén Muñoz, which is Ricardo Santana's agent.
Yeah,
he's the guy that brought me here.
Really? No kidding. I know.
He brought me here.
Huh.
Yes. He came to Lima and he talked to my uncle and my dad, and he took my papers. And in a couple of months, I had a visa and I was flying on the plane with him. He even came to pick me up.
Really? Oh, that's great.
Yes.
And so he was your agent then when you first arrived, obviously.
Yes, he was my agent for a few months, because, you know, it got tough and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to go out and go somewhere else and just kind of take advantage of my bug, you know, because Calder was being too tough. So he let me go, and you know, we are very good friends, you know.
That's great, Miguel. And so my question is, when you arrived in the States, did your bug just start all over, so you had that full year left of, you know, from winning your fifth race here, did you have your entire bug here in the States?
No, because they, you know, the stewards would ask you, you know, when did you win your fifth race? So I said, this day. So they only gave me like less than 6 months.
Okay. See, I didn't know how that works. So you only had 6 months. So no wonder you wanted to go to Chicago, you know, move away from, you know, the really tough competition at Calder and go to Chicago to, like you said, make the most of the time you had left with the bug. And so when you did that, Miguel, when you went up to Chicago, how was the reception there?
I went up there, I got there like the last week in Hawthorne. My agent was Oscar Sanchez. And I met a lot of new people, a lot of good people, and a lot of great people that gave me opportunities. Basically, I started riding in Arlington, and I met a lot of friends, a lot of good friends. I became really good friends with Eddie Russell, you know, great, great guy. He helped me out a lot. He taught me a lot. I became friends with René Douglas, Jockey Eddie Perez. You know, Eddie Perez let me stay with him at his place for a few months until I got going. You know, they didn't charge me a dime.
Wow.
So besides him, trainers, I met trainers like Hector Magaña, Moises Yanez, Jimmy DeVito. A lot of trainers that, you know, they gave me a hand and they put me on some winners. So I didn't kill him, but I won a few races until I lost my bug, you know.
So you stayed in Chicago until you lost your bug, and did you continue to stick it out there your first, you know, time as a journeyman?
Yes, I lost my bug, and I hung around there for two more years. I had some solid decent business, I won some, good races in the winter in Hawthorne. We come back to Arlington. Years ago, Arlington would be, a lot tougher than it is now, and business will slow down a little bit in Arlington, but I did okay until an agent Steve Elzey from Kentucky called me up and brought me here.
Nice. And I want to ask you a little bit too about when you first lost your bug. Obviously, we all know that is such a, there's a lot of pressure, I guess, as far as when you lose that weight allowance, and everyone's looking at you to see if you're still going to win races. And did you feel that pressure, and was it extra tough once that happened?
Of course, a lot more pressure because everybody does what they do. Everybody talks about, let's see this kid when he loses the bug, what's going to happen, how he's going to do it, how he's going to handle it. So I was very nervous, my first race without the bug, trainer Moises Yanez put me on a horse, and I'm five lengths in front of the eight pole, and here I am trying to look cute. I stand up, I ease the horse, I got this, and missed a horse on the inside, came and nailed me at the wire. It was Liz Morris. It was Liz Morris,
yeah,
on a horse. It was the worst feeling. The trainer was mad. I had to go see the stewards. I was going to get fined. But, I had people backing me up, good friends, Eddie Russell. They would be pick your head up. Everybody makes mistakes. Just keep working hard. And I did, and things worked out.
Oh, my gosh. It's funny. Liz Morris, I just met Liz for the first time at the PDJF at the Castle in Versailles the other night. And we were talking a lot about her riding career in Chicago. And
yes.
Oh, my gosh, I bet you hated her then. Whoa.
Yeah, I met Liz when she was riding in Chicago. She had the bug. She was a hustler. I think she hustled book now. She's a hustler. But, man, she nailed me right at the wire. I was like, man, I'm in trouble,
Oh, my gosh, it's brutal. That's brutal. And the fact that you have won so many races, but you remember that horrible defeat. And I'm the same way. I still sometimes think about, those times you got nailed on the wire. Oh, they keep you up at night, don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, so you decided to go with Steve Elzey here in Kentucky. And Steve's obviously well known to be one of the best agents around. And was it sad for you to leave Arlington? And you obviously had such a close-knit community there. Was it kind of sad for you to leave?
Yeah, you always make good friends wherever you go. But, life goes on. And when the opportunities come, there comes excitement and hunger, And I was just excited and I wanted to go. People were like, it's one of the best agents in Kentucky. You have to go. They would just, I got pumped up, and I had no problem with leaving. I was ready to make a move and see if I could, see if it would be the, next move, you know, the good move. So it worked out. I mean, we did, the guy had a lot of business. As soon as I came, I got on a winner for sure. I think I came the last 2 weeks of Churchill and started winning races. And after Churchill, he took me to Ellis Park and made me leading rider.
Wow. So you won your first riding title there at Ellis Park.
Yes.
That had to be a really great feeling to be the top there at Ellis. And actually, Ellis, I grew up near Ellis Park. That was the first racetrack I ever visited. And it's a cool small little racetrack there. It seems to attract some, you know, some decent horses and trainers as well.
Yes. Yeah. No, Ellis Park is a very good. It has a very good surface, you know. The turf is very good. I liked it a lot. Especially over the years, it has had, you know, its struggles and stuff. But now, you know, they have, you know, some really, really decent money, and the people with the good horses in Kentucky, they even leave their young horses in the summer. It makes it a very good place to spend the summer at, and also very competitive.
How about Churchill, Miguel? When you first arrived at Churchill for Steve Elzey, what was that like? I'm sure the colony at Churchill at the time was fairly competitive. And what kind of who was all there in the room at the time?
Oh no, yeah, it was very strong. Thankfully, I had win a race for Mike Maker in Chicago before I came, and he put me on my first winner there in Churchill. But I saw a lot of great riders. Mark Guidry, Rafael Bejarano was there before he went to California. You know, Mark Guidry, you know, Ravi Alvarado, Corey Lannery. I mean, just it was just as tough as it is now, you know. Julian too. It was, you know, Julian de Peru with the bug. He had, you know, windows. Big races with for trainer Biancom. He was, you know, he was a, you know, up and coming star, you know.
Well, Miguel, we'll talk a little bit more about that after this break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, fifth generation ink, distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Pena, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Congratulations to Chantel Sutherland as she won her 1,000th career race on Saturday at Santa Anita. Mike Smith once again made the most of his 10 mounts as he won 3 stakes in 3 days. On Friday, Smith won the Kentucky Oaks aboard Abel Tasman, and on Saturday, Smith won the American Turf Stakes aboard Arklow. Big Money Mike then hopped on a plane to Texas to win the Grade 3 Steve Sexton Mile aboard Moore Spirit. Smith finished the week with 3 wins, 1 second, and 2 third-place finishes. Julian Leperoux had a great week at Churchill as he won the Grade 2 Ali Sheba aboard Birdsong and the Grade 1 Woodford Reserve Turf Classic aboard De Visadero. Leperoux also finished second in the Grade 3 Edgewood, Grade 1 Humana Distaff, and the Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks, helping him finish second in total earnings for the week. Leperoux finished the week with 6 wins, 3 seconds, and 4 third place finishes. Laurent Giroux led North American stakes wins as he won 4 out of his 10 stakes mounts at Churchill Downs. The Frenchman won the Edgewood aboard La Cornell and the Grade 1 La Troyenne aboard Big World on Friday, and then capped off Derby week by winning the Churchill Distaff Turf Mile aboard Roca Rojo. Giroux finished the week in the money on 43% of his mounts from 7 wins, 2 seconds, and 6 third place finishes. No one can deny the skill that is required to safely navigate through the field of 19 other 3-year-olds on a sloppy track. But the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, John Velasquez, did so effortlessly as he guided Always Dreaming to victory in the Kentucky Derby. With his second Derby win, the Hall of Famer led all North American jockeys in stakes earnings and total earnings. Velasquez finished the week with 5 wins, 2 seconds, and 3 third place finishes. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at JockeyTalk360.com and for Kindle at Amazon.com. Half a Chance is a story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
The field turns for home. Champagne Doro, Picus Blue, still going at each other at the top of the stretch. Bonnie Blue Flag trying to come on through in between horses now. And up the fence comes Buckle Up Buttercup, Christine Daae, and Lovely
this
Little
is
Bellingham,
Jock Talk on the Horse Racing
horses.
Radio Network, presented by Tito's
Champagne
Handmade
Doro
Vodka.
Kicks away from the field in the final furlong and won the test by 4.5 lengths. Bonnie Blue Flag was second, and Belle of the Hall came from way out of it to get third money in 1:22.3.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Miguel Mena. Miguel, we just heard that replay of your first Grade 1 victory aboard Champagne d'Oro in the 2010 Test Stakes in Saratoga. And I want to talk about that in detail here in a little bit. But before we went to break, Miguel, we were talking about your arrival to Kentucky, and you took the riding title at Ellis Park, and tell us where you went from there.
From there, I rode Turfway in the, back then they had Turfway in the September meet. I was leading rider in there too, and then I rode Keeneland, had a few winners at Keeneland, and then it was Turfway next for the winter. I spent 2 winters in Turfway, riding at Turfway.
How about Turfway Park in the wintertime? I know I've only ridden a couple races there at Turfway, but that is a cold place in the wintertime. Oh, my gosh. You had to bundle up.
Yeah, you know, cold days. Cold weather, but you know it was time to win races and do the best of you. You know, you only took one ride to get a little warm up.
Well, and when you're winning, it makes it all better, right?
Yes.
But
that is true.
Was the tracks there the synthetic or was it still dirt at the time?
No, it was synthetic. I didn't ride there when they had dirt.
Okay, so what was your initial reaction to riding on the synthetic?
You know, something really different. You know, you didn't have to use many goggles. You could ride with one goggle. I guess at the beginning it was a likable thing, you know, but after it got old because it will change. It will change the circumstances of the race, and sometimes speed, or sometimes you will have to go really wide because the horses will die on the inside, you know. But I guess we have to get used to it and just ride, you know.
That's right. And overall, would you say synthetic was more speed favoring, or would it favor the closers, or what would you say that was like?
In the beginning, it was always speed. You know, even worse if you will get a little bit of water, a little bit of rain, it will be more speedy. But then it just started getting bad, and like I don't know if you ever pay attention to turf in the winter. You know, jockeys ride wide; they have sometimes go 10 wide, and horses will stop. You know. I guess in the winter the poly track hits too hard and horses don't like it in the face, and you can't even save ground anymore, you know?
So you kind of have to change your riding style, and you can't really ride what you would consider to be a smart race and save ground. You have to go wide, right. And I know when I rode it mostly out east, and I rode it at Parks, and when I rode at Parks, it was kind of similar. The inside wasn't very good, so everyone would go wide, and I kind of felt like, you know, I'm not riding well because this is just going against what I was taught, but that's the way you had to ride because, you know, when you were on the inside, everyone would, you die out. But I completely understand that, and you know, you want to ride smart, but you can't. It's kind of frustrating, I suppose.
Yes.
But
yes, it is.
Yeah, it definitely is. And where did you stay that main Kentucky circuit? Did you go back to Keeneland after Turfway?
Yeah, we did Keeneland after Turfway for 2 years, and back to Churchill, you know, and we did pretty good. We won some races. Some stays, we did good, you know, until I think the summer of 2007. Steve decided to take me to Prescott, and you know, he mentioned that they were gonna give a lot of money away, and it was a brand new racetrack with called Taipira, a surface named Taipira or something.
Yeah.
And we went there, and they ran 1 month. And I don't think I ever made more money than I did at that time. We went there, and they were giving away. I mean, a lot of money, like maidens 80,000 or something.
Wow.
And I was leading rider there, and I came back to Keeneland and did very well afterwards.
Yeah, that's big money there. At Presque Isle, and I'm assuming that it was probably a similar, you had to ride the track similar to Turfway, given they were both synthetic racetracks. One was different than the other, but was it kind of similar?
Kind of similar, just a little different. It didn't have the kickback as bad as it did at Turfway. So I kind of got a little more comfortable because horses didn't overreact to it, and I was able to ride better races and learn a little bit more, you know. But it was a very good experience. It was a nice place.
Well, Miguel, I want to talk about, as we mentioned early on in the show, obviously we just saw Always Dreaming win the Kentucky Derby on Saturday. And in 2009, you were riding a horse by the name of Back Talk, and he eventually took you to the Derby. So tell me a little bit about Back Talk.
Yeah, Back Talk, a nice horse for trainer Tom Amos. I rode him to victory to his maiden winning race first time out, and he was a very nice horse. He went from there to win a stake at Churchill, the Bashford Manor, if I'm not wrong. And after that, he went on to win the I stayed in Saratoga for 2-year-olds early in the summer. And they gave him a little break on between. And then the next year, I rode into in some stake at Delta Downs. And then he took me to the Derby. It was a very nice It was a great experience to ride that race with that horse.
Was that your first Derby?
Yeah, it's been my first and only. It was my first one. You know, it was a long shot, but it was an amazing experience just to be able to ride a race in front of so many people. I don't know. I got the chills. I was so excited.
I know I've heard we've had some guests on the show describe that feeling when you first walk out onto the track and they're playing My Old Kentucky Home, that's just such an incredible feeling. And was that the same for you?
Yes. Yes. You know, they start playing the song as soon as the horses start crossing the tunnel. I mean, it's just your body. You get the chills, and you know, 150,000 people singing "My Old Kentucky Home." I mean, I don't think it gets any better than that.
Oh my God, I can't imagine. That has to be an awesome, awesome feeling. And did your family in Peru, did they come up, or were they watching the race there from home?
Yeah, they were watching the race from home. They were very excited, and they saw me on TV. You know, unfortunately, they weren't able to come. They didn't get the visas on time, but they were very excited for me.
And that had to be a great feeling for you to, you know, that's kind of one of those milestones where you made it. You're in the Derby, you know, and that had to be just an incredible feeling. And tell me about the actual race. You know, field of 20, my gosh, that has to be, you know, how many goggles did you wear? And that has to be difficult to maneuver through traffic. And tell us about the race.
Yeah. I think I wore 6 goggles, and it was nose track. It was sloppy. You know, I actually had an okay tip. I just didn't, you know, the first half a mile I was in the race, and then the horse just got tired and wasn't good enough to I guess keep, I mean, get the distance, you know.
Well, you also had a horse fairly recently who was headed towards the Derby with International Star in 2015. You took the Grade Two Louisiana Derby with that horse and the Risen Star. And tell me about that horse, and then tell us the story of what happened there.
Yeah, I got lucky that winter at Fairgrounds. I got lucky to end up on the horse on all those Derby preps down in New Orleans, and he was a very nice horse. We won all those three prep races, and we did it, you know, in rail skimming fashion. You know, I think he was a very nice horse, even though. Yeah, American Pharoah won the race at that time, but I was very excited about his chances. You know, he was a very good horse. He was a horse that was going to be able to save ground and take advantage of, you know, traffic and stuff, because he would go through any kind of hole. You know, I was really, really looking forward, but unfortunately, you know, he got hurt. He just 2 or 3 days before the race, you know.
Mm. Gosh, that has to be so frustrating to know that you have a good one and then all of a sudden, you know, it doesn't work out. That had to be really, really frustrating.
Yes, it was. It was, you know, because, you know, everybody wants to ride the Derby, and I rode it before with a really long shot that had basically no shot, but that year I had a mount that, you know, he was the leading horse by points, and you know, I actually had a horse with a shot. You know, I was really looking to it. You know, even after the race ran, you know, American Pharoah won it. Maybe he couldn't beat that horse, but I knew he would hit the board at least. You know, but unfortunately, things happen, and he didn't get to run, you know.
So many highs and lows in this game. Miguel Mena is here joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Miguel, as I just said, you know, there's ups and downs in this game like you wouldn't even imagine, but you know better than anyone, really. And I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the hardships of a jockey's life. And you've already told us about moving around, you know, a jockey's life. You're pretty much a gypsy and you go from track to track. And there's a lot of pressure when you go out there and you're riding for big owners and trainers. And some riders, they turn to alcohol or drugs or things like that. And you had to deal with some battles yourself.
Yes, I did, you know. I came to Kentucky when I was, I think, 18 years old. I was a very young guy and I started making money. And, you know, you feel cool, you know. You have money, you have people chasing you, people wanting to hang out with you and women. And I did that. Just a lot of partying. I liked it a little too much, and it became a problem because it would get out of hand. I would drink and didn't get up in the morning for morning workouts, and I lost the amount to the West Virginia Derby because I didn't get up to make my plane in the morning. You know, and you know, it took a lot to get a handle, you know. I made a lot of mistakes. I made some big horses, some big races, and you know, I became an alcoholic. It burned a lot of bridges, but you know, it was just a matter of growing up, you know. I think some people go through that kind of stuff, you know, but thankfully I was able to, you know, be around some people that really gave me a hand, and I attended, you know, AA, and I got into a program, and then, you know, I got married and I have two children and kind of fixed that and stopped drinking, and now I challenge myself to work hard and go out there and try to do my best again, you know?
That is awesome, Miguel. And I'm sure it's a very hard thing to do, to, you know, admit that you need help and then, you know, to go on and get help. And it had to be very difficult, but your attitude, and it's so great. You want to be better and you want to do better for your family. And tell us a little bit about your family.
Yeah, my mom and dad, they live in Lima, Peru, and I have two brothers and two sisters. My two sisters, they went to college. They have a degree and they have, you know, good jobs down there. But I have two brothers and one that is actually working here at Churchill Downs, galloping horses for Bernie Flynn at the moment. And I have a younger brother, 19, hoping to get a visa to come to the States and try to start the bug here around Kentucky.
Really? So he's going to follow in your footsteps. And that's great. And how old is he?
He's 19.
So he's young, and you'll be able to show him the ropes. There you go. That's great.
Yes.
That is great. We'll have to keep an eye out for his name in the program soon. But tell me also about your wife and kids.
Yeah, my wife, her name is April. She's from Chicago. Mom and dad from Mexico. And such a beautiful person. She's my better half, and we've been married for 5 years, and we have two children, two beautiful girls, one four-year-old, her name is Naela, and a three-year-old, her name is Montserrat. And, you know, here we call Louisville our home, and we have our home in here, and we enjoy being in Kentucky, and then spending our winters in fairgrounds, New Orleans, and we just keep growing and keep learning and becoming a better family, better parents every day. And we're very, very grateful to have good kids, healthy kids, and that's what makes me get up in the morning and go out there and hustle myself and challenge myself to become a better rider and better father and better person.
That's great, Miguel. And do you bring your little girls to the track very often to watch you ride?
Yes, they do. They love coming, especially in the mornings where they can pet the horses and feed them some carrots and feed them some hay, you know. And they're not something that worries me. They're not scared, you know. They're not afraid to go pet them and touch them and all the stuff, you know. I don't know.
So now
I wouldn't want to see them get on a horse later on.
Well, see, now I got to ask you, would you be opposed if, say, one of your little girls came up to you and she said, Daddy, I want to ride races like you. What would you say?
You know, I would be scared to death, but I wouldn't say no.
That's awesome. You would let them live their dream like you have been able to live yours. And you never know. Maybe one day they will.
Yeah, you can't stop their dream. You gotta follow your dream.
Exactly right. That is exactly right. And we only have a couple minutes left here on the show, Miguel. I can't believe how fast time has been flying. But tell me what goals you still have in mind for your future career.
Well, you know, I keep learning every day. I want to become a better rider, you know, ride better races, you know, be a better jockey and hopefully get the opportunities. You know, I want to win big races, you know, stakes, you know, why not the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, why not Breeders' Cup? You know, that's why I get up in the mornings, to get the opportunity, to get the chance to be maybe in the next Kentucky Derby winner, you know. So that's my goal, you know. Ride 15, I'm 30 years old. I want to ride 15 more years. I want to show them what I got.
I love it. Who's the nicest horse you've ridden?
You know, I've ridden a lot of horses, a lot of nice horses. Trainer Marcassi was very good to me. He put me on $500,000 winners.
Oof. Wow.
He let me ride. I rode pool play for him. It was a long shot. We won the Stephen Foster at Churchill. He was 30-1. I rode Tepping for him as a 2-year-old. She won the Delta Princess at Delta. I think that might have been the best horse I ever ridden, but I didn't ride her as a 4-year-old when she became the queen of the turf, you know.
But hey, you got to sit on her back. What was she like to ride?
I did. I broke her maiden, and then we won the Delta Princess. She was very nice. They always knew she was special, but she was running on dirt at that time, and then she needed, as a 3-year-old, she kind of fall apart or maybe needed time, and they gave her the time, and she came back as a 4-year-old at Gulfstream Park. Of course, I'm not at Gulfstream Park, and Julian started getting on it, and she became a turf monster.
Yes, she certainly did. Yeah. But that has to be a cool feeling. You got her started. They're breaking her maiden, and that victory in the Delta Downs Princess. That's nice to have on your resume. Having you got to take her to the winner's circle. Most definitely.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, my God. And any, you have some pretty nice horses you're getting on there at Churchill. Any nice horses you're looking forward to coming up?
Yeah, I got some good business. Starting, you know, I ride some nice young horses for Trent Alstaff, for Wes Holly and Brett Calhoun. I had a horse that I'm really high on that didn't really run well in the Pat Day Mile the other day. His name is Excitations, but I'm not giving up on him. I think next race he will show his real talent. I don't think he really liked the surface the other day, the slap, and just how hard it was. But I'm looking forward to him for some bigger races in the future.
Yeah, that track, like we were talking about earlier, was definitely sloppy. And if you didn't like it, well, they weren't going to run very well. So I will thank you, Miguel, for that information. I will keep that in mind. Hopefully make some money on it. Good to hear, Miguel. And really briefly, like I said, just a couple minutes left. But take me really quickly, like, through a normal day for you there at Churchill. You work horses in the morning.
Yeah, my agent and I, his name is Richard Price, we go out there and, you know, he will line up my workers and we just show our faces, you know, grab a cup of coffee and walk the barns, work our horses, you know, have a good relationship with the people that we ride for, and we try to get on better horses and get ready, you know, so we can get more mounts. And then, you know, after I come home, I like to do my yard work and take care of my house, and, you know, I cut my grass and I do my, you know, my plants and my mulch and all the stuff, you know, and I stay busy. I work out, I run a lot, and I don't go to the gym. I just kind of have my own little gym in my garage, and I try to stay busy in my house.
And then when you're getting ready for the races, do you watch a lot of replays or study the form?
Yeah, you know, buy the racing form, watch the replays to get to know the horses that you've never been on. You know, you have to study, you know, read your program and know, you know, kind of handicap, know what's, you know, the speed and all that stuff, you know. You got to do your homework, I think, to be able to be 110% ready for the races.
Absolutely. You have to know, you know, do you send your horse? Do you take back? Is there a lot of speed? There's, you know, it's definitely important for a rider to know how to handicap and how the race will set up.
Exactly.
Just about a minute left, Miguel, but do you struggle with your weight very much?
No, I just have to be very careful and disciplined, you know. I stay away from the bad stuff, the fried stuff, the carbs, you know, breads and stuff like that. And just do a lot of exercise, you know. I have my running stuff, I have a running suit, and I do a lot of running and just try to keep, you know, I do 116 or 17 pounds, and I just stay busy, you know, and eat healthy.
Stay busy, Miguel. Well, we are wishing you all of the best. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to. Don't forget, join me and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. We will bring you 3 hours of live racing coverage right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dallapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.